Julian mentioned that 65% of the residents of Belgrave suffer from depression or mental confusion of some kind. God knows how he worked out this magic figure, but I have to say that my own estimate is not far below. Julian expressed great anxiety about the fact that these people don't get any kind of treatment or support. One could feel that he was partly speaking for himself. He mentioned having been in psychiatric hospitals and dreading them, and others in the squat, including Marianne, having had similar experiences. Peter and Dave were particularly concerned about Marianne, who seems to have been feeling severely confused and extremely lonely since yesterday. Their sympathy was very genuine and profoundly moving. I was interested to hear Peter saying at one point that, nice and friendly as they are, the people of the Belgrave need a mother. An obvious self-reference. Was on gate duty again tonight. Lots of young people were streaming in and out until well after midnight. Quite a few of them with bottles or cans. There was also a lot of pot smoking in the office by the gate. Pot smoking has always been tolerated by the squat. At least grass doesn't make you argumentative or violent, as alcohol often does. Around 2 or 3 in the morning, I heard some loud talk and roaring thunder in the corridors, and it emerged later that a wild acid party had taken place. Sandy turned up late at night. She had been done for begging and spent 6 hours in the nick, but then was released without charge. Also late at night, I saw a group of people standing on the pavement on the opposite side of the road, as if they were talking to each other in low voices. I was told that they were Christians praying about the evil that goes on in the squat. The usual Wednesday evening meeting didn't take place today. Very few people turned up at the appointed time, and after waiting for a while, we decided to cancel the meeting. There was an atmosphere of despondency, with several fed up faces around. It's the first time that a meeting has been cancelled since I came back. A disquieting development. I'm not sure that I fully understood why this happened. I suspect that it's partly related to tension between Peter and Dave on one side and Pauline and Craig on the other. I've heard several criticisms of Peter and Dave by Pauline and or Craig. According to Peter, Pauline wants to become some sort of leader, and she claims she would sort a lot of things out. There was a squabble earlier in the day about who was going to chair the meeting, which I think relates to all this. In the afternoon, I helped Arthur clear the backyard, and we were occasionally helped by others as well. It's interesting that, like Graham, Arthur too can be seen to carry on doing his bit in spite of all his bitter comments about the hopelessness of the place. Mind you, his work was punctuated with grumbles and gentle sarcasms, and he insisted that he was doing this purely out of shame about the sight of the backyard and what the neighbours would think about us. But that is what he said, and even what he said reveals some concern for our image as a community. Perhaps I'm kidding myself in thinking that there is anything new, anything cheerful, anything promising, anything revolutionary, anything significant about this whole experiment. Perhaps it is just an entirely familiar and predictable story of inertia, chaos, selfishness, corruption and misery. Came back to number 1 Clapham Road in the early evening after 3 days of absence. As often when I've been away for any length of time, I couldn't help feeling a little anxious and wondering whether I would find the place burnt to the ground or that someone had been killed or everyone evicted. But things seemed extraordinarily normal when I arrived. The gate was neither locked nor guarded, the premises were tidy and everything was calm. The only evidence of any change was the presence of a tray full of sand on the first landing, with a ferocious notice urging dog owners to train their dogs to shit in the tray rather than all over the corridors. Home sweet home. Spent some time cleaning and mopping. There were few people around. I wondered whether it was worth doing it on my own. whether I was giving people a chance to get away with doing nothing or giving them an example which they would follow sooner or later. I didn't seem to get much of a following, and after scrubbing half of the backyard I decided to go and have a nap and see what would happen. After I woke up I found the whole of the backyard neat and tidy. Well, this was heartening, but I shouldn't give the impression that it always happens like this. Sometimes you can go on working for quite a long time without any sign that anyone is inspired to help. This is why a lot of people give up participating in cleaning after a while. They say, why should I clean other people's shit day after day if they don't do anything about it? And then their own despondency eventually infects the newcomers, who are usually full of goodwill. Fortunately, there are waves of enthusiasm from time to time when a few people get together and pick up brushes and mops, and then other people join in. And of course, there have been times when we all agree at a meeting that such and such day will be cleaning day, and that often works. This afternoon we found a mattress dumped in an empty tub on the second floor, burning inside. This was a disturbing discovery. It seems extremely unlikely that the mattress was there and in that state by accident, nor could anyone hope that this mattress could set the building properly alight. It looked like an act of aimless pyromania. I was told that earlier in the day there had been another fire on the top floor in the room where a serious fire broke out 12 days ago. At dinner time, Pauline cooked a terrific chicken curry using donated food, and I talked with Mike and a few others about the question of fire protection. We decided to organise a system of night vigils to reduce the risk of a tragedy. Once again, I thought that this place had truly been a home for the homeless, a refuge for young lovers, a place where so much friendship had grown. It had been a home because when you come down in the morning, you found a dog playing in the corridor with a tennis ball, the mail being delivered, tea on the stove, laughter or perhaps screams in the background, and someone to greet. Pauline and Craig are common law husband and wife and have a common social security number. Today, Craig collected the money and disappeared. Pauline said she didn't want to see him ever again. Dear Audrey, where shall I begin to talk about her? She's one of those little people who don't make much noise and haven't had a great place in this diary, but who are in a sense the real soul of our squat. People for whom our house is a godsend refuge because they have nowhere to go and they can't face the life of the streets, who didn't leave after the fire, who attend all the weekly meetings but rarely speak at them, who often ask you for 50 pence but never fail to repay you the next day, who do their bit to help without seeking recognition for it, who arrange their rooms with love and keep them tidy, who don't mix with the crowd but cultivate some fine friendships, who live with us like sheep among wolves, always friendly, but keeping sufficient distance not to get into trouble. Take Donald, for instance. This man is a real pet. His room is wonderfully arranged and he spends most of his time in bed, half naked, reading or listening to the radio. He also spends a lot of time with his dear friend Derek, a fellow Scotsman who lives across the corridor. He drinks quite a lot, but always in his room, and I've never seen him becoming violent or quarrelsome as a result. Every day he dutifully mops a particular portion, always the same, of the corridor in which his room is situated, including the dog shit if necessary. He's been here for months and months and months. I'm equally fond of Audrey. She's the sort of person who you could really see as a happy mother, but who has visibly suffered a great deal and looks worried and tired most of the time, smokes a lot, and often lacks the enthusiasm to do anything. Once in a while, her happier self comes to the surface and it's beautiful to see her laugh. She spent 7 years in Punjab with her former Sikh husband, and one thing she would really like to do is to cook chapatis for everyone in the squat. But unfortunately, we don't have a suitable pan. She's had to survive for the last 5 weeks without any social security payment. Now she's sick with fear that Alfonso might be deported within a few days. I slept in the afternoon, and when I woke up it was already dark. I discovered that for some obscure reason no dinner had been cooked. Today being gyro day again, there were few people around. I gathered a few good friends together, we bought a box of candles and then started cleaning the kitchen and cooking a meal. For once, our food reserves were rather low, consisting mostly of loads of parsnips, carrots and potatoes. But Audrey brought some spices from her room and managed to produce a delicious vegetable stew with what we had. Marianne, who loves helping in the kitchen and was obviously delighted with all this activity, talked our ears off while we peeled mountains of vegetables. While we were cooking, an American guy called Greg turned up at the door and asked if he could stay with us. Several other people had moved in during the last few days and we had no hesitation in letting them in. I liked Greg immediately. He'd just come from France where he'd blown all his money. He begged his passage to Dover and somehow made his way to London, where he spent a couple of days sleeping rough until someone told him about our squat. He wants to find some work and go back to California. He seems very friendly, positive, sensible and humorous, the kind of person who, like Richard and Dave, could make a big difference to the squat. He is completely exhausted and ate like a horse before hitting the sack in one of the rooms that's been recently vacated. He slept until Saturday morning, with only a brief appearance on Friday. The meal we had together was one of the sweetest moments I have lived so far at No. 1 Clapham Road. For once it was very quiet, with most of the potential troublemakers being out on the usual Thursday evening binge. Those who were left behind were mainly the little people of whom I talked about on Tuesday. Audrey, Alfonso, who was released yesterday with a suspended sentence, Marianne, Richard, Dave, Jane, a quiet but wonderful woman who calls everyone Midook and Milov, and a few others. We all sat together around a big table in the kitchen and had a real family meal, lively, hilarious, filling and very long. The atmosphere was filled with warmth and companionship, and it was beautiful to see all these beloved faces shining in the candlelight. It was a very enlightening occasion. There was an agonising discussion about whether or not the churches ought to open their doors for the homeless. According to Dan Martin, this is a debate that takes place every year between the bleeding heart do-gooders who want to feed the poor and the radical justice seekers who disagree with taking pressure off the state. Two members of the St. Mungo community also gave us an enthusiastic account of their bold experiments with self-management. They even had a shelter with only 4 staff for 28 people. Well, it's a step in the right direction. Another one might be to invite homeless people to these meetings. And I really don't want to say that our own project is a model. It's more like a utopia. 2 new members joined the squat today. Dick, a herbalist who works for free in a nearby hospital, and Brian, a dosser from the bullring. What Ringo has taught me is that an explosive place like this can only survive if people make an effort to mind their own business. As far as he is concerned, scrapping metal from a building that is going to be evacuated soon is not a particularly reprehensible activity. And I have to admit that so far, the living areas have been left intact. Who was I to get in his way? Another thing that came through tonight is Ringo's own frame of mind. Among other things, he probably resents the fact that someone like me commands more influence than he does in the community just as a result of being more articulate. Many people consider Ringo as another brainless dinosaur, and he must feel entitled to greater respect. Can I blame him for asserting himself in his own way? The question remains how a community like ours can deal with this kind of behaviour. This would be easy enough if there was a real awareness of the problem and a common determination to handle it in a non-authoritarian way. For instance, we could agree that should an incident of this kind happen, everyone would gather around the people who are being violent and tell them to stop. The fact that Steve and Sarah managed to prevent Ringo from beating me up is one indication that this system might work, but it would take a lot of time and patience to build up the required commitment to a non-violent form of conflict resolution. Today, I accompanied Marianne to the Delos community in Wellingborough. The Delos community was founded a few years ago by Jean Steinhardt, a wonderful woman who helped start the squat last January and has remained a faithful supporter ever since. Jean is planning to invite Marianne to join the Delos community, and today's visit was a prelude to this risky suggestion. I spent an hour with Marianne in the kitchen in the afternoon waiting for Jean to come. Ringo was around, much to my apprehension, but he didn't seem to mind my presence. He came into the kitchen a couple of times with his dog and even sat near me once. I wanted to talk to him, but I felt too nervous. John left the squat, disgusted with Ringo's behaviour. His departure is a great loss. He was a very genuine guy who did a lot to make this place work, particularly by cooking delicious meals, and had a good deal of good sense and goodwill in spite of being stoned half the time. He was a true grassroots revolutionary, a homeless dropout who had no political program, but whose practical idealism sowed seeds of change. Marianne, who didn't know why he had left, also felt sad about it and said, "It would have been nice if we had his picture, wouldn't it?" John's departure also leaves a void in the kitchen. The door of the storeroom has been kicked in again, and after what happened to John, no one seems inclined to put another lock on the door and keep the keys. Nor is anyone cooking for the community. The kitchen is a free-for-all, with dirty dishes all over the place, and the food reserves dwindling fast. This too is depressing. More heartening is the fact that there are quite a few new faces around, young and old, black and white, male and female. I was particularly happy to see that Fran had moved in again. Fran is a young woman who used to live in the Bullring and did her bit to start this squat. On the day when we took over, she hijacked a whole tray of Salvation Army sandwiches from the Bullring and brought it all the way to Clapham Road, just to support us. She stayed with us for a while when she was pregnant and then moved out again as she was about to deliver. The baby died soon after being born. After that, I believe that she spent some time in various homes for drug addicts and that she managed to give up drugs. She told me that she is now staying in the little building across the backyard called The Lodge with Max and her husband. She's full of enthusiasm and energy, and I think that she will be a great asset to the community. While Marianne and I were waiting in the kitchen, she burst into tears from time to time, lamenting, "It's not fair, is it?" I finally understood that she was referring to the fact that she hadn't seen much of Dave for the last few days, and not at all today. For some reason, Dave seems to have been avoiding her recently, perhaps because he needs some release from the stress of looking after her all the time. It occurred to me that Marianne's feelings for Dave may be nothing short of being in love with him. Finally, Jean Steinhardt came with a van and a few friends, and we all drove to Wellingborough. The Delos community, which provides a home for persons with mental handicaps, is a very inspiring place. And a lot of what I saw there reminded me of the squat itself. Social rejects building a new society. friends finding joy in doing something for each other. So-called useless people who have been healed by community living. One of them spoke for the first time in 9 years to say that he didn't want to leave. Marianne found herself immediately at home there, and soon she and Mary were walking down the road, hand in hand, each convinced that she was helping the other. Marianne rambling about how Audrey hoards 20 mugs in her room, and Mary replying in the same vein that she had suspected it all along and that hopefully things would improve after the winter. We slept in a warm house with electric lights that you can turn on just by flicking a switch, with no fire risk and no Ringo. And should some ruffian have come to the door and caused trouble, all we had to do was to leave him on the other side. And if he didn't go away, we could call the police. And they would remove him like some smelly garbage. I wouldn't hesitate to stay here if I were Marianne. But of course, she has nothing to fear from Ringo. He calls her love. And his Doberman likes to put his head in her lap. I went back to London in the afternoon, leaving Marianne behind and telling her that I would come back again soon or send Dave. On the train, I was considering the prospect of returning to Clapham Road with great apprehension. With fear fueling my imagination, I could think of many reasons why Ringo might still want to beat me up. Perhaps he would find it insulting that, unlike John, I didn't flee in fear. Perhaps John would complain to the police and they would come looking for Ringo. And Ringo would think that it was me. Perhaps he felt frustrated that Steve had stopped him from teaching me a lesson and was waiting for the next chance. Perhaps last Wednesday's incident had only been a pretext for beating me up and he had deeper motives to want to get rid of me. Or perhaps Og did, and he had asked Ringo to persuade me to leave the squat. Aside from this, I was wondering what would happen at the weekly meeting, whether it would be the right thing to do to raise the issue of violence, and how Ringo would take it, not kindly, for sure. I also expected to find the place in a real mess, given the way things were going yesterday. Altogether, I was feeling very weary as I approached the squat, which for once seemed to me like the grimmest place on earth. I left, munching some raspberries in the sunset, feeling happy. The time has come to move on, and when I come back, it will just be to pack my belongings and say goodbye. I'm under no illusion that today's euphoria will endure. It's a rowdy crowd that lives at number one. And there will be more storms. I've already heard complaints that Fran was too pushy and even allegations that she was a dangerous woman. But our ship is also a solid one. It's wonderful to be able to leave on a cheerful note.